Welcome to 360 Degrees of Healthcare with Dr. Stan, an in-depth look at our industry from our very own Chief Medical Officer, who will talk with other medical and industry professionals on the changing and evolving landscape of the healthcare system from the inside.
My name is Dr. Stan Schwartz. I'm an infectious diseases physician on a lifelong journey from medical student to practicing physician to health system executive and now healthcare entrepreneur, and as a regular patient because getting older teaches you a lot about healthcare. My guest today is Jan Berger, MD. Jan is one of those wonderful people who know a lot and do a lot. She's a pediatrician who's been in private practice and academia. She serves on numerous boards of both public and private companies. She's an author who recently published a great book on reestablishing trust in healthcare. It's a good read, and I'll link to that in the show notes. Jan also leads Health Intelligence Partners, a consulting firm that works with global clients. Previously, she was Executive Vice President of CVS Health, as well as Chief Innovation Officer and Medical Officer. Along with her MD degree, Jan holds a Master's in Jurisprudence, a Certificate in Healthcare Business Administration, a Board Director Certificate from the Kellogg School of Management, and if that's not enough, a Black Belt in Six Sigma. Dr. Berger, thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for being a guest once again on the show. And today, I really look forward to learning a lot. So, prescription drugs, pharmacy benefit managers, otherwise known as PBMs, and the extraordinary cost of drugs to employers, especially some of these new high-cost drugs, are things that many employers are talking about. You know, during my frequent review of self-funded employer claims, I will see annual claims for some of these drugs. I call them singing commercial drugs, the ones you hear on television, for as much as $25,000 to $50,000 per covered member per year, which is extraordinary. We used to see big surgeries on the list of employers' high-cost claimants, and now it's for things like Skyrizi and Cosentyx and Humira and the like. So let's get into some of the questions. But first, I'd like you to help our listeners understand how you bring a particular perspective today that may be different from what they're hearing from benefit consultants or specialty drug providers and so forth. What's different about Jan Berger's perspective?
Well, Stan, first of all, thank you for inviting me back. I always enjoy our conversations, whether they are in things such as this or the times we have together in other situations. I'm excited about talking about this issue for a number of reasons. And one of them, I think, is the background to Jan Berger. I, as you know, started as a physician. And at that point in time, early in the 80s, there were 15 drugs maybe that I used in treating patients. A lot of it was reactive, not proactive. Some of it was symptomatic cure, you know, symptomatic versus cure. You know, from when I started in medical school in the late 70s and early 80s to today, healthcare has changed significantly. And a large reason it has changed is because of medications. As my career has gone on, my responsibilities and my activities have broadened. And where I bring a unique experiential and perspective here is I have worked across all stakeholders, including working with pharmaceutical companies, including working with PBMs, including working with health plans, including working with employers. So I have a broad perspective. I also have been very involved in the evolution of both the PBM and of formulary management, which is a lot of what we're going to talk about and that employers and others need to better understand. And they partially need to understand the history in order to understand what's happening today and where they can proactively work in order to maximize value in the future.
So let me start with this question. How should employers work with their benefit advisors to truly understand the PBM accounting? And does the new mandate for fiduciary responsibility, does that beget new questions from employers to PBMs that they may not have asked 2 or 3 years ago?
The short answer is yes. Now let me dig into what you just asked, because you asked a number of questions. Let's start with the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021 and the fiduciary responsibility you just asked about. Really, for employers to act in accordance with the CCA, the Consolidated Appropriations Act, which from this point on, I'm going to call CCA because it's a long set of words. They must do three things. Employers must do three things. They must have plan oversight. They cannot hand over the plan oversight to a third party, a consultant, the PBM, anybody else. They are financially and regulatorily responsible for the plan. Number two is they have to have asset management. And what I mean is, if they're paying for something, they have to know what they're paying for and why they're paying for it and be informed. Again, they cannot pass that on to another person. And finally, and probably in some ways most importantly, they must manage the present and future costs of their health and pharmacy plans with both integrity and the value of benefits in mind. So what we're going to come back to probably as my closing comments are also my starting comments. And that is, employers are responsible for all the decisions and all the actions that they take for the health and pharmacy benefits of their employees and beneficiaries. That's not always been understood in the past. And I think in many cases, they believed that some of that responsibility could be passed on to the PBM, to the consultant, or to the health plan.
So let's take my favorite hypothetical, which is Joe's Transmission and Body Shop, who employs 300 people, and he's got several locations. And Joe is an absolute expert at buying bearings and grease and lubricants and power tools, but Joe doesn't know squat about buying healthcare. So he's got to rely on a benefit advisor as far as buying drugs for his employees if he's purchasing healthcare. How does he check whether an advisor or who's ever helping him has a conflict of interest? What does he need to ask his advisor about? Are you being compensated for anything other than what I'm paying you for?
So I think that, first of all, the same way I wouldn't know how to buy those bearings and other auto parts, I don't think we expect Joe to have that deep expertise. I do believe that Joe has to ask the right questions. Also, if Joe is running a business, sometimes things aren't going to make sense that or don't seem logical, and Joe needs to dig in. He also can't say, you know, I am going to rely solely and fully trust, and you know, trust is one of my favorite topics.
Oh, yeah.
On this third party, and whatever they say goes. It is Joe's responsibility to have some basic knowledge. So I'm not asking Joe to be a pharmacy or a healthcare expert. I'm asking Joe to be a good businessman and understand what he's hoping to achieve. And are his goals absolutely the same goals as the consultants and others that he may be using to make the decisions he has to make?
So Joe's looking at his advisors are going over his spend, and he's looking and he's got a $40,000 spend for this psoriatic arthritis drug, and he's got a $35,000 spend for somebody who's getting a eczema drug, and he's got a $42,000 spend for someone who's getting this drug or that drug that ends in a long name and has lots of side effects. What does Joe do?
Okay. I think, first of all, I want Joe to take a step back. Okay. And Joe has to understand, because Joe is running a shop where he buys bearings and other parts, that value is not just based on unit cost. Okay. Mm-hmm. Joe knows there may be a $50 bearing, a $75 bearing, and a $100 bearing. And the $50 is the lowest unit cost, but it's made by shoddy material, or the manufacturer has had manufacturing problems in the past, things of that nature. Joe has to understand that the pharmacy and the medical activities and things that he is buying are in that way no different than bearings. The other thing Joe has to understand is that maybe the bearing for the Mercedes is different than the bearing for the Ford, and different from the bearing from the Porsche and anything like that. And this is one of the issues that over, when I talk about historically how we looked at cost and value of drugs, is now different. The same way that different bearings may fit in different cars, different drugs are going to react to patients in a different way. So he has to walk away from just thinking about unit cost. And so what he has to do is, when he is talking with whoever he is using as a consultant or benefit advisor, is several things. First and foremost, who are you paid by? How do you define success between your contract and mine? And what is the knowledge you bring to the table around this topic? I think that's a very, very important starting place.
So that brings me, actually segues beautifully into my next question. You've used the term before when I've heard you speak about PBM misalignment. Tell us a little bit about that, and how does that kind of fit into understanding if everybody's on the same page and rowing in the same direction?
So we know today that in order for two organizations to be aligned, they have to have the same incentives. And in this case, incentives are for the employer, are, is my patient getting the right drug for the right condition at the right time from the right place? Okay. Because value is cost plus quality. And what are we looking at today? We're looking at a drug which is either going to decrease symptomology, improve the health, or cure a patient, okay? An employee. A PBM or a health plan who is managing the drugs does not necessarily have the same aligned goals. They are getting paid potentially through a number of ways. They can be paid for services. They can be paid for data. They can get payment from the difference in cost of them acquiring the drug and then getting the drug to the patient, all of those things. If you think about it, those things don't necessarily align with the goals of the employer. So asking number one, how are all of the ways you get paid? You know, we often talk about the issue of rebate, which I do want us to come back to in a moment because it's so very important. But, you know, since the early 2000s, there has been a movement towards transparency of rebate and payment or pass-through. What isn't understood is that there are many, many other ways that PBMs and health plans or others who are managing the drug may be getting paid. And that may not be in alignment with the employer's right patient, right time, right drug from the right place. And that's the challenge that plays out today, is because we don't have misalignment and we don't have 100% full transparency of how the PBM or health plan managing the drug are being paid.
Okay, so I'm talking to Joe right now, and his question is, how do I keep them honest, Dr. Berger?
First of all, you have to ask the right questions and not let them push back. All right? The Consolidated Appropriations Act, CAA, states that access to pricing, all data, not just the data you want to give, but all data has to be available to Joe or any other employer. There's been huge pushback on this issue. And, you know, it's very interesting. I want to go back for a moment. There was a woman who was the chief HR officer of a very large company a number of years ago. And I was sitting in the room, and the health plan refused to give all of the data to a third party who was managing chronic illness. And they kept saying, we don't have to, or it's too expensive, and all kinds of excuses. And this CHRO, God bless her, said, if you do not share 100% of the data and everything that is necessary here, you will never be part of our RFP or offered as a health plan again as long as I am here. And they did not believe her. They did not share. And for the entire time she was CHRO, I will tell you that health plan was never offered by that employer. This is a woman who stood very, very firm, realized she had the power, and did what was right. I would argue today, whether it's on data or full disclosure, the thing that the CAA does is give regulatory power to the employers. The question is, do the employers want to, and do they have the gumption to take what has been given to them in order for them to do truly the right thing? And that's tough. But employers can't complain if they don't take the power that's been given to them, basically educate themselves on this issue. And, you know, pharmacy benefits are an interesting thing. The drugs are what are keeping most of us alive 20 years more than we lived, you know, years ago. When you and I went to medical school, people died of heart attacks at early age. They died of cancer at an early age. Rheumatoid arthritis put them in wheelchairs and made them unable to both enjoy life and work. That world has changed. But we do have to understand how to maximize the value of these drugs. And that's how they have to start to educate themselves about what is and what is not acceptable.
So in the course of all this, Joe gets a phone call, and actually he gets two phone calls. One is from a consultant that says, I'm going to help you with cash purchasing strategies, like putting good RX in, because as we all know, sometimes you can buy a drug cheaper for cash than you can through your insurance. And Joe also gets a call from one of these specialty pharmacy benefit managers that only handles the very expensive stuff, the champagne of drugs that costs $30,000 and $40,000. Does Joe need to partner with these additional people? What does he look for in that situation?
So full transparency, I use cash cards such as GoodRx in conjunction with my pharmacy benefit, and have for a number of years. And I save a lot of money. So first of all, do I think, you know, Joe's got these 300 people and he's spending money to keep them as healthy as possible so they are good workers and can help his business to thrive. He therefore has to look at what are the assets that will do that. So do I believe today, for both Joe being a smart spender of his revenue on behalf of his employees, and being a supportive boss in making sure that the out-of-pocket costs of his employees is such that they can get the care, whether it's the medicines or other things, at a cost-appropriate level, I think you have to look at all of the assets that are available and tools that are available. That being said, for example, there is a large Blue Cross Blue Shield plan in California that is doing a new model. They are taking some of the drugs away from the PBM and using some of those assets you just talked about, such as Mark Cuban and GoodRx and things like that. My concern is not that he's doing it and that the plan is doing it. My concern is that it will be very confusing for the consumer, member, employee, whatever title you want to call that person. So you also have to make sure that you don't have the tools there alone without giving the support. My guess is Joe doesn't use a Sawzall or another tool, put it out there to their employees without any training and say, go for it, because there are going to be fingers flying all over. So it's that same sort of thing. I will also say there are a few pharmacy benefit managers and pharmacy benefit administrators out there that are acting on the at the bequest and aligned incentives with employers. And so I think another tool that could be in Joe's toolbox is, do you go to one of these organizations that is very clear, that is not using rebates, that is not taking money in other ways that are not discussed and aligned? And so that's another tool and consideration Joe should have in his toolbox.
Can you, in two sentences or less, explain to the folks in our audience who really don't understand the ledger domain that takes place with some of these rebate situations?
Yeah, so very easy. A rebate is a payment made to a PBM in order to have drug placement or preferred drug on a formulary. It is not aligned to clinical decision making whatsoever. So it is a payment model, a pay to play, if you will, for lack of better term.
And the payment goes from the manufacturer to the PBM?
Goes from the manufacturer to the PBM. Now, interestingly, the question is the manufacturer the person who is saying, here, PBM, I am going to give you this money? Or is the PBM saying, hey, manufacturer, in order for us to put this drug on the formulary, you have to pay me? At the end of the day, both organizations are finger pointing today. But the reality is there should not be payment for placement if you are going to get to the right drug for the right patient at the right time and through the right place. Just shouldn't happen anymore. The science does not allow for it.
So does Joe get to know about all these rebates? Or if he doesn't, what should he be asking?
So Joe should, first of all, Joe should understand the rebates are occurring. And Joe should understand how the money is passed and why the money is passed and what is the impact of the money being passed. So Joe needs to also ask, and this is new over the last 10 years, is, are there exclusions from exclusions of drugs from the formulary that you are suggesting I go on? Okay. So a PBM comes to Joe and says, these are the drugs on our formulary, and this is how much your employees are either going to be paying a copay or a coinsurance. And so the question is, number one, are you getting rebates for drug placement of any sort? Number two, are you getting payment or rebate or discount for drugs being excluded from the formulary? And lastly, and equally important, are you getting payment or rebate for drugs to go through any kind of utilization management or step therapy theory? That question should be asked moment one. And if there is a yes, then the next question, and I'm not saying you don't necessarily accept that, is there full ability for my employees and covered beneficiaries to appeal an excluded drug, a preferred drug, or a utilization management tool drug? If those questions are not being asked, then the employer really is not following the CAA.
So going back to that exclusion, so a manufacturer, somebody is paying money to a PBM to exclude somebody else's drug?
Absolutely.
And that's not based on a drug being better than another drug. It's just pay to play.
It's pay to play.
Wow. Let me turn to another question here. So I got a call the other day from somebody who said he had a swollen knee and his doctor said, I'm going to put you on a medicine called colchicine. And he asked me about colchicine because the doc advised him that colchicine was going to be kind of expensive. And I said, colchicine has been around for 70 years, 60 years. It's one of the oldest generic drugs we have. I mean, it's like, why in the world would colchicine be expensive after 60 years? And it's just generic. What's happened to generic drugs that are now getting to be so expensive? And so, who's benefiting from that?
So there's a couple of possibilities there. Number one, generic drugs have a life cycle like any other drug. So when a brand drug loses its ability to be the brand drug, all right, then generics can come into play, as you know. The first 6 months, it is generally one drug, and they're discounted from the brand, historically. After that period of time, multiple generic companies can come into play. That's when the price of a generic really drops. Once it becomes so inexpensive and there is very little margin made by manufacturing the drug because it's been commoditized, generic companies will often stop making that drug. And therefore, there's less competition and the price goes up again. And eventually, it is not unusual for at one point in time there to be 5 or 10 generics for colchicine or, you know, thyroid medications or others. And then the as they drop off because the margins aren't there, you're back to 1 or 2. And that's when, again, costs go up again. So that's a lot of what goes on. Now, the other part of that is how much the PBM is charging for the drug versus how much the drug actually otherwise was. So and that's the tough issue too.
So the PBM is making money on the spread then from acquisition to what they're actually selling it for, even if it's a generic.
Absolutely. You know, there's been all kinds of talk about the manufacturers and the cost of a drug. And there may be issues there. I will not deny that. At the same time, like anything else, when a drug comes out, a manufacturer knows what they need their margins to be to continue to identify new drug opportunities, right? So they have a margin of X. As the rebates, whether it's to the distributor or to the PBM, as those rebates go up, the price of the drug has to go up in order for the manufacturer to maintain whatever they know their margins have to be. And that's another reason prices are going up. It is not that the manufacturers, in some cases it is, but in many cases, it is not that the manufacturer is making more money on it. It's they know what they have to make and everybody else gets a piece of the pie. How do they stay whole?
Let me ask you a question about, you know, at the end of every singing commercial on television, there's always that, ask your doctor about how you can get this drug for $5, or if you're unable to afford your medication, we may be able to help. Tell us about the coupons and the things that, you know, will allow patients to get some of these drugs that they might not be able to afford otherwise, but the whole purpose of having a copay is to have the patient have some skin in the game. It seems like there's a real conflict here between what the plan wants somebody to pay and what the patient, the member actually pays to get what they need.
Again, a great question. I think that today, there are very, very few patients who can afford a 20% or 30% out of pocket for some of these high cost drugs. Now, where the confusion comes in is there's the gross price, you know, the price out of the manufacturer to start. And then there are these rebates or discounts. If I am working for Joe and I have a 20% coinsurance, which is not unusual, especially for these high cost drugs, I'm not paying 20% of the discounted price. I'm paying 20% of the gross price. So it is not unusual for $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 out of my pocket. And what those drug coupons from the manufacturers, which are patient assistance program, are tied to, is to help patients who can't afford that $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, or if the patient has no insurance, or if it's, as we talked about earlier, there's a certain number of drugs, and many of the PBMs have 400 to 600 drugs that are excluded today that aren't covered. So if done for the right reasons in the right way, those patient assistance programs are out there. They really are helpful to the patient. Now, it's not always done in the most upstanding way, and that's the other problem. But you have to understand what you're trying to achieve. And why is one drug better than another drug in an individual situation?
So tell me, please, about your X-ray vision for the future, about what you think is going to happen in terms of regulatory changes. And I'm especially interested in the whole concept of why in the United States we pay more for a drug that is cheaper in other developed countries, that it's just we pay more. Is that something that's ever going to go away?
So first of all, and again, this is a multi-tiered question. U.S. versus other countries in paying less. Interestingly, the one place that is not a true statement is in generics in some cases. Okay, so I want to leave that out for the moment. And many countries make a decision on what is going to be covered and what is not going to be covered in drugs. So there is a buying power opportunity there, that the United States has about 100 PBMs, and each PBM has multiple formularies. So the decision-making and the buying power is not necessarily the same. It is interesting. You can go to two PBMs and they'll say drug A is a much better drug, and the other one will say drug B is better drug, and they're looking at the same exact science. So my argument would be there's something else going on here. Where in other countries, it is looked at for all of the people in that country getting care. So in my mind, there are two ways we can truly get to the actual fully getting to value of the drug and not just unit cost. And that is that employers or the government step in. Either the government steps in regulatorily and says, no more rebates. Or employers come out and say, both for to get the best value for my employees and beneficiaries, we are no longer going to pay for pay. And we are only going to do this in the way that makes right clinical sense, which brings to the outcomes the best way. Those are the only two ways you're going to do it today. Otherwise, lots of people are going to make money from how the process works with very little value at the end to good healthcare, which is what we're trying to get to, right? I'm not saying perfect healthcare, but I'm saying maximizing the value of the drugs you're paying. Paying $5 versus $15 for a drug is just looking at unit cost. Looking to see, is that the right drug for the right patient at the right time to give you the outcome you're looking for? That's what you got to go for. But the truth is, today, it's either going to be the government or the employers.
So, any other thoughts or words of wisdom for our listeners before we wrap up?
The last thing I would say is, you asked about the future. We are heading relatively quickly to the world of precision medicine. And the reality is, if there is pharmacogenomics, so your genes to the right drug, or pharmacokinetics, how do all of the drugs that I am taking interact with each other to impact me? We are getting closer and closer every day to that being the reality. Instead of going into the doctor for your rheumatoid arthritis or any other disease, your asthma, and saying, let's start with this drug. Oh, that doesn't work. Let's go to this drug. Oh, that doesn't work. Those days very quickly are coming to an end. And so at that point in time, the reality is that we have to stop looking at formularies the way we do today. It's an N of one formulary. And employers have to start to know, how does that play out? There's good evidence out there today that says going to that level and precision medicine, which started in cancer, but is very quickly broadening, is the way. None of us want to be average when we're sick. We want the care that's going to help us to be productive and live good lives. So we have to come back to, you know, I think the CAA, although it is a very long, confusing regulatory piece of legislation, if employers understand what they need to do and why, they will not only maximize their not being sued due to a fiduciary lawsuit, which is starting to happen. They're saying yes to PBMs on formularies, and their employers are coming and suing them because they can't get the drug they need. That's a new thing for employers. And they're saying, but I relied on these other people. So I would argue it doesn't have to be, Joe doesn't have to have deep science. He has to understand a few simple things and take the same responsibility he does for his bearings with healthcare and medications. And Joe can be very effective at both following the CAA and getting the benefit, maximized benefit of the dollars he's spending for the insurance for his people.
Great. Thank you so much. This has been great. And it's always a pleasure to interview someone with the degree of insight and experience that you have. I will leave your contact information if anyone wants to follow up with you in the show notes. And I sincerely hope that we're able to meet someday again in the future and talk about what's happened in the year since this interview.
I look forward to that. And thank you again for inviting me today. Have a great day.
Thank you, Jan. Take care.
Thanks for listening, and a special thanks to Zero Studios for sponsoring this podcast. Zero Health works with mid-sized, self-insured employers to help them get remarkable savings on their health care by connecting the employer and healthcare providers through direct contracting, and at the same time providing a great benefit to employees by eliminating co-pays and deductibles. Learn more on the web at zero.health or send an email to info@zero.health.
We hope you've enjoyed the time with our very own Dr. Stan for 360 Degrees of Healthcare with Dr. Stan Schwartz, a part of Zero Studios. Tune in, subscribe, and review our podcast to keep current with the ins and outs of the medical and healthcare industry from the inside out.